They're looking to get caught side of Font. Lafondra away from David. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Elm Park Rolls preview podcast, brought to you, of course, by Phantom Brew Co. We're doing it a little bit differently this week. What with transfer deadline day and everything, we're bringing you two separate podcasts. Of course, this one, we're going to be looking into the view from the opposition this week. And that is, of course, Oxford United. First time we've played Oxford in nearly 20 years, nearly 24 years in the league, though the last two times we played them at their place was at the Manor Ground and in the League Cup. To look at Oxford, we have got a special guest. We have got Jack Ward on from the Jack Ward Football Podcast. How are you doing, mate?
Yes, good, mate. Yeah, it's hectic, isn't it? Deadline day. I feel as though I'm having a breather from football off the pitch and now being able to look at football on the pitch. So it's a nice respite from scrolling endlessly through Twitter. I think that's the best way of describing it.
That just is what deadline day seemingly is. Yes. Now that and whacking on the Sky Sports News channel and watching their deadline day counter clock. I think Reading fans have been staring at that clock, just wanting it to come seemingly ever quicker. What with our rogue CEO who's seemingly offering everyone else at penny prices. But yeah, how's deadline day been for you guys though, Jack, actually on the topic?
Yes. Yeah, better than last year's. January was very, very painful. We had a very bad January last time, and we were in a very different position. This time we're recruiting, hopefully, to continue a good first half of the season on the whole. We're also recruiting another transfer window in one season with a new manager, which wasn't ideally the plan, but it seems as though that is all working okay at the moment. We've signed Owen Dale earlier today from Blackpool. We've already got Will Goodwin in during the window, Tyler Bury, Jamie Cumming to replace James Beadle. Hoping to get one done before the end of the window. We're recording this at just past seven, so we've got a few more hours left of it. I think we're looking at a striker. And I think because of this being done on Thursday, we definitely believe Owen Dare will be in the squad for Reading. And if we can get that striker over the line in the next couple of hours, hopefully he will be too. So, yeah, it's been busy, but much more encouraging compared to last year, for sure.
Striker's probably one thing you've lacked this year, I think, for Oxford. Certainly, I remember when we were looking at Oxford prior to when you came over to the Medeski. I think Your top scorer, I can't remember what his name was, but it was one of your left-backs.
Probably, yeah, Greg Lee. Yeah, and yeah, he wasn't actually available for that game, which is quite interesting. So he didn't play in the last game against Reading. He's back now. Mark Harris, funnily enough, you mentioned that. He was our striker that we kept playing because we didn't really have anybody else. And he started the season well, then went on about a 10-15 game run without scoring a goal. And you look at the striker position, you look at the goals in that area, and they were very, very weak. Now, hopefully with Mark Harris, the goals are going to carry on coming because they have improved over the last couple of games. Will Goodwin's come from Cheltenham. He can't play because he's came with a quad injury, so he's not going to be available for a week or so. And if we do get that striker in that we're looking for on loan, looks to be potentially Harry Leonard, I believe his name is, or Leonard from Blackburn. That looks to be the name mentioned. So like you say there, we are sort of looking for a striker. We've gone from having maybe one striker that we play who hasn't scored a goal because of a lack of options. We could end the window with three, which is really interesting. So yeah, I think you're right. Actually, in the game against Reading in the reverse fixture, we were crying out for somebody up front who could maybe take the game by the scruff of the net, because funnily enough, it was our left back in that game that scored, but not our top goal scorer one.
Yes, remember that well. Before we dive back to that first game, obviously when we previously played you, I think it was Buckingham's third game. It was either third or fourth.
Yeah, very early. It would have been.
And and at that point, he hadn't actually, I don't think he'd got a win. I don't think he'd scored a goal yet in the league as well, because I think your first goal came at our place, I think, if I remember correctly. Since then, I guess it's been patchy. I guess with the way that Oxford started this year and losing Liam Manning, it was always going to be a tough job coming in and kind of kicking on from there, or just maintaining that start to the season that you guys had under Manning. What's it been like, the transition? Kind of, I don't like using that phrase transition, but I guess it is kind of at the moment with Oxford. What's it been like, that transition period with Des Buckingham?
I think you're fine to use the word transition, because it has been, and also because it was quite a unique one, because not many times in football a manager comes in when a team is performing extremely well. You know, how many times a manager come in to a side they're struggling and they can sort of galvanize? We hear the word galvanize ultimately. This group didn't really need galvanizing, maybe to an extent where they were a little bit gutted that Liam Manning had gone. and the manner that Liam Manning had gone. But in terms of galvanizing a group that were performing, that was exactly what was needed, but not really needed from Des Buchanan when he walked through the door. That was a really quite unique situation for a manager to walk into. So straight away, it was about, like you're saying, continuing the performances that we'd seen, continuing the results that had been performing on the pitch, and, you know, keeping a very, very healthy league position. Obviously, if you look at the league position when he came into where we are now, things have got worse. We can't move away from that. We haven't really improved. I think we've been affected by injuries a lot, like a lot of teams have. That is not an excuse. It's just maybe a reason why things have been a bit more difficult. Greg Lee, who you mentioned earlier, has been an instrumental part of the team. Des Buchanan's only played 2 games with him, and he's been in charge now for, 4 or 5 weeks. There's been players, like, you know, we've signed players that have been injured. Maybe that's more of our fault and less of the player, but it's more having an option and a selection option for Des Buchanan. I think that might have been a hindrance. I think working out exactly what style he wants to play, but more the formation, and has he got the players right now to sort of have that alignment together. I think there's still just a little bit of feeling out. I think we're feeling out exactly what's going to happen. I think there was a little bit of a time to adjust to him coming in with no assistant manager, because Liam Manning took his assistant with him and the analyst. So we had to get you one of those, which is happening. I think he's at the Arsenal women's team at the moment, so we're sort of waiting for him to finish his time there, and then we're going to pick him up soon. But he is employed by Oxford and scheduled to start very, very shortly. But in terms of an assistant manager, we've actually promoted from within, so it's about sort of for him personally working out exactly what his role looks like and feeling that out. And then as fans and as more of the football that we see week in, week out, it's ultimately about staying patient. You've got to be patient and understanding that with time, this is something that should work out, because you look at his CV, you look at his pedigree, he's done some wonderful things across the world, but never in England. So we're just waiting for that to click, I think.
Yeah, no. And kind of when he joined you guys, obviously, I remember previously we spoke with George Ellick at Top 20 on the previous preview. We kind of talked about it being a bit of a outside of Oxford, a name that not many people would have known and kind of maybe left field. What was the feeling really from your side in that appointment? Are you confident of kind of him moving forwards, would you say?
Yes, I am. I think it comes down to, like I said, their patience and believing that his CV and pedigree and what he's achieved will eventually come good. And he's not there is a connection there. There is a pre-existing connection. He was a coach at Oxford before. So a long, long time ago, it was under Chris Wilder when we were 10 years ago, I think. So we're talking a long time ago. There is a pre-existing connection there. I know the board and the football club did say it, and it's hard to believe, but I do believe them. He wasn't employed just because of that pre-existing connection. Because ultimately, like I said on my podcast the other day, when there was a few question marks early on, the City Group didn't employ him because he was an Oxford boy. The City Group didn't employ him because he was a coach at Oxford United. They employed him because they see him as one of the most exciting young upcoming coaches. He's worked at Mumbai, Melbourne City, New Zealand, and we know how strong the City Group coaching unit is. There's some wonderful coaches that have come out of that, and one was Liam Manning, who we had before. So, you know, we trusted that it is, and we still do trust that it's going to come good. With Liam Manning, yes, he was part of the City Group, but he'd had time at MK Dons before, so he understood the division, he understood the culture in England, even though he is English, but he understood the culture of managing in the English Football League. So, yeah, it's about understanding that, yes, maybe we're not performing to that extent that we were in the start of the season. I think George said it in your podcast before. We were probably overperforming in certain metrics, which I think is a good thing. But then when it sort of dries up, you can maybe see a few gaps here and there. But ultimately, we've got a good squad. We've got a good squad. We've got a good coach. And we've got a clear direction, which is important. And the recruitment so far has been pretty good as well in January under a new manager. So, yeah, we're sort of... I think he's still working out what's going on. We're still working out what's going on. The players are sort of similar. And hopefully that sort of triangle is going to come together. And then we can sort of continue on this train, hopefully, to promotion, which is not necessarily the expectation this season, because last season we only just stayed up in League One. But it's about making sure we've got those building blocks in place to make sure that going forward, that's definitely a possibility.
No, that's brilliant insight on that side. And jumping back then to his third league game, coming to Reading. Were you at that game, Jack, at the Medeski?
I was at that game. Yeah, I was.
What did that day kind of mean to you as a fan and the rivalry as a whole? Because seemingly, if you ask Reading fans, different fans will give you different opinions on the Reading-Oxford rivalry. might be the same on the Oxford side of the fence as well. What was that day like for you?
It's difficult because I'm a fan that, like, I'm an Oxford fan because of my family. So I'm an Oxford fan because my dad supported them and both my granddad supported them. So the rivalry and the knowing that Reading is a big game for Oxford has come from them. It's come from a generational thing. Mm-hmm. For me personally, it's not something, and you said at the start of the show, it's 20 years since we played at Oxford, and I wasn't an Oxford fan when we were at the Manor. I was too young for that. So I never actually went to the Manor. My first game was at the Kassam. So I don't really know anything other than that. I'm still only 19. So that wouldn't have been the case. We wouldn't have played when I was born, which is a frightening thought for some people, and maybe a little bit for me too. So I, in terms of that, the historical, the rivalry there, that's something that I haven't experienced. So giving my insight on that wouldn't be fair. In terms of what it means to me now, again, it's as simple and basic as my family know that this is an important game and has been an important game. And I've heard the stories around the owner that tried to merge the two teams, and that's where it all started again. But until you're living in that moment, and living during that time, is quite difficult to grasp it. A rivalry that, you know, in 5 years' time isn't existing now. Again, you've got to look back on that very, very differently. And fans at that time will look back at this one very, very differently. And football's evolving and changing with different generations within it. So I think for me, it's strange. I think that I know there's a rivalry. It is a big game for Oxford. We'll be up for it. So will you be. But again, I think maybe the fans of my age that think they know it as much as they probably do, maybe are reading into maybe the older generation too much, which is fine. But I think from my perspective, it's knowing through generations that this is a big game. And, you know, you'll be the same as me. Most importantly for you and most importantly for us, it's winning the game of football because of what it means on the table. You know, if it's a case of we want to win because of where we are right now, you want to win because you want to get out of the bottom four. So that's probably where my slightly boring but football answer comes from.
No, I get it. Because to be honest, the game that we played at our place, that's the first time I'd seen Reading and Oxford play. It was like earlier in the season we played the Slugs down the road as well. We played them, and that's the first time
we can agree on that. You know, there's something that we can agree on.
we can bond over our mutual hatred of the Slugs. You know, that's fine. But yeah, it's an odd one, because like you say, for me as well, it's a generational thing, because I'm 26, and that was my first time I'd ever seen a Reading Oxford game. I wasn't at the Manor Ground. Again, I was too young to see those games. I was nearly still, probably just out of a pram when we were last playing, you know, you guys in the league. So it means different things for different people. The one thing that 100%. Starts brewing and kind of building these things though is games, because you need some spiky moments and stuff in rivalries and that, I think, for them to really kind of kick on from there. Let's look at your recent run, really, because I think there's one thing that might give Reading fans a bit of hope around Oxford lately. We've talked, obviously, around the bedding in period, really, for Des Buckingham. Oxford on a run of 3 winless at the moment, obviously lost at Barnsley, lost at Bristol Rovers, got a good draw, though, against Portsmouth in the week. That was probably the one that Reading fans probably didn't want you to get, to give you a bit of a bounce, obviously, off the back of that game. Reason for optimism going into the Reading game off the back of that Portsmouth game, or is it just, like you say earlier, the inconsistencies?
I think there will be encouragement. We needed that. We needed something from that game. I think that was something that we said going into it. It's going to be extremely difficult, but we need to see a performance. And I thought, as much as it wasn't the most dominating game of football, we played on the transition, we played on the counter-attack, and against a side like Pompey, that's probably what you've got to do a lot of the time. They're going to have a lot of the ball. That's the way that Messina wants his side to play, and we sort of played on the break. Both of our goals came from counter-attacks, and I thought defending well. If you saw the goal, the first one was extremely, it was a scramble. It was a horrible goal to concede. And the second one was a great goal from Callum Lang, so he couldn't do too much about it. You look at the goals in isolation, they were quite stupid to give away from an individual perspective and from a team perspective. But the goals we did score, I thought we did all right in that game. You mentioned Barnsley. I thought that was a really bad game of football. I don't think Barnsley were great. It was 5th versus 6th going into it. It didn't feel like that. It felt like 20th versus 21st in the National League. It was an awful game of football. It was really, really bad conditions. The rain was pouring down, the wind, it was a Tuesday, cold. It was a horrible game to watch. I was there and I wish I wasn't, I'll be honest. And that wasn't just the result. It was a game where Barnsley took their chance. We missed a few, but the rhythm and the actual momentum of the game couldn't be grasped because of the situation that the game and the weather was in ultimately. And then the game against Bristol Rovers, I mentioned it briefly. First half was terrible. Second half, we grew into it, but it was too hard of a mountain to climb. We'd already sort of thrown it away with that first half performance. And you looked stronger than that. We had back-to-back away wins, Charlton and Carlisle. I thought there were some pretty good performances in there. Again, quite patchy. We saw here and there what we're about, but over a 90 minutes yet, other than Burton, we haven't really seen that. We've got away with it because Charlton and Carlisle are in terrible forms. We've been able to be patchy and come away with results. Against Barnsley, you can't quite do that. It seems at Bristol Rovers, we couldn't do that. And against Pompey, I thought that was the last time where we've seen a real fighting spirit. We went 1-0 up in that game. We then conceded two, but we scored again. And that was the character that we were missing. I think if we'd lost that game 2-1, there would have been that feeling again of, has this team got that real grit? Because at Derby, we went 2-0 up and lost that game 3-2. There was a feel of, have we got that spirit within the group to come back against the top opposition? And against Pompey, we did show that. And we've signed players since then. Hopefully, we'll get a few more players back every single week for injury because they're sort of on scheduled timelines to return. Josh Murphy could be available. Hopefully, we're going to get two players that we haven't seen yet in Owen Dell and one before the window shuts today available for Reading as well. That strengthens our bench because our bench has been weak in those games. I said that is another issue for Des Buckingham. He hasn't been able to impact games off the bench because our injury record has been terrible since he's come through the door. So like you say, the recent form isn't great on the eye and it hasn't been great at all times, you know, full stop, really. But against, you know, on Tuesday against Portsmouth, we did improve and you could see that there was a clear plan in place and that was executed effectively. And hopefully we can sort of take that performance, but also the spirit into the game. Because in a derby, you're going to need that spirit. You're going to need that fighting edge and that ultimately the mentality that you're going to provide is going to be reflected on the performance a lot of the time in these type of games.
Form gets thrown out the window in games like that. Absolutely. Sorry to use a football cliche like that, but yeah, I think it's well, hopefully that won't be the case in Reading's case, but obviously I'm sure Oxford fans will be wanting it definitely to be the case. A few players we touched upon in the previous game leading up obviously have been massive in your early season form, and kind of I guess recently for you guys, because they've both played pretty well recently for you, Cameron Bannigan and Ruben Rodriguez, two fantastic footballers that I think I'm not going to say many, probably everyone wants to have in their team this season with how well that they've kind of performed. Have there been any other standouts really apart from those two of late for you guys, or are those who really the core still?
I'd say Brannigan has continued that great form. I think Rodriguez, we changed the system slightly and we sort of played him away from that number 10 and he hasn't been that effective. He came back into that number 10 position against Pompey and we saw him get on the ball more and trying to create. So with luck, and I think we will stay with that formation and that setup in that more effective position, he will be just as good. Brannigan is a player that you could play him anywhere and you feel as though he's going to be a top class addition to a side. I think Tyler Goodrum, someone to always watch out for. Tyler's been great this season, signed a new contract in the middle of it. And before and after that point, he's been great. Scored another goal against Pompey on Tuesday. He is a really, really good player. Technical. He's somebody that drifts inside, likes to shoot, but also can create. He's turned up some big goals in big moments this season. So I'd say Tyler Goodrum's definitely a shout. And yeah, hopefully there'll be some new faces that can also, we don't know yet, that can sort of step up and add to that list. Elliot Moore at the back's been good. We might have Simon Eastwood back in goal because Jamie Cumming, our goalkeeper, had an injury. We don't quite know the seriousness of that. So we might have a different goalkeeper in for the game. But yeah, I'd say other than Ruben and Brannigan, you've got Greg Lee returning, which is massive. Tyler Goodrum has been fantastic as well.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough on that side. So let's look to wrap this up right now and look at the game at the weekend. Presume you're going to be there in the home end?
Yes, I should be. That's the plan. Yes, I don't actually live in Oxford, so in terms of going back for it, I'll hopefully be there. That is the plan. I was there for the away game, so I should be there for the home one.
What's your score prediction for the game? It's probably a bit pointless asking for score prediction because I don't think neither of us are going to go for a loss for our team here. But
no, I think my prediction would have been a little bit different if we hadn't got that result against Portsmouth. I still think, and again, Reading, I think your position in the league is slightly deceiving. I don't think you are as bad as your league position is showing. I think if you didn't have the deduction, you could tell me specifically, but I don't believe you'd be in the bottom four. So we're looking at a team that are, you know, have still got good players and you know you've sold a few out of your control, which hasn't helped. and wouldn't help any team. And I think, to be fair to Sellers, I think he's got a team still playing and still getting results against any circumstances. You look at, just by reading externally what's going on at your football club, to be able to get results and get any type of performance out of a group of players that, let's be honest, are being treated badly from top to bottom, it's not very easy. And to be honest, you've collectively come together and still picked up some really, really important points. Having said that, I think Oxford are going to win the game at home. I don't think it's going to be comfortable. I really don't. I don't think any of these games will be comfortable. I don't think you can look at league position and recent performances. It comes down to who wants it more on the day. I'm going to say 2-1 to Oxford. I think you will score because we are very, very clumsy at giving away cheap goals, and we will do that and we'll make the game more difficult even if we're in control of it. But I still think as they will just about get over the line, I'm going to say 2-1 to Oxford.
2-1. I might end up being boring here and say 2-1 to Reading as well. 2-1's a very easy scoreline to predict when you want to predict a win for your
team. The other team score, but you win. Sort of. Yeah, it's close. Exactly. The other team score. Still, you know, it feels right for everybody involved.
But no, do you think you're going to keep up your form this year? Do you think playoffs are going to get playoffs this year? Do you think it'd be disappointment not to get playoffs?
I think it will be disappointing to not get playoffs. I've said this a few times. I think it's because of the start of the season that we've had. We don't want to waste that start of the season. So if we don't do it, you feel as though we were great and then we still didn't quite do it. And this season, if we're being totally honest, isn't as competitive as it has been in recent years. I think it's not an easier league, but it's definitely more open. You know, we saw in League One last season, I know you weren't part of it, but you know, Ipswich, Sheffield Wednesday and Plymouth, there was about a 20-point gap from first to that fourth. So it was a massive, massive gap. This year, it feels very much open. If we win, I think if Pompey don't win their games in hand, or I think it's more Bolton don't win their games in hand, they stay where they are. But if they win, then they get 9 points on top spot. So it's ridiculous how open it is. And with a lot of games left, there is very, very small points between teams. So yeah, I think it will be disappointing purely because of where we started. In terms of going into it, look, like I say, we started this season with expectations that our recruitment was better than previous years, but we'd only stayed up by 2 points the year before. So we didn't expect to be in sixth. But when the season starts, you start playing well and there's a bit of dip. You start going, oh, maybe surely we can't waste a good opening sort of 3-4 months. Changing manager hasn't helped us, if we're being honest, but we're still in a place where we feel as though we can, you know, end the season in a really good spot.
Well, best of luck, obviously, for the rest of the season. I know some fans might not like me saying that, but I say it to everybody, so I'm not going to change that today. Best of luck, obviously, for the rest of the season, Jack. And thank you for joining us as well on this edition of the Elm Park Rules Preview podcast. You have a special podcast from Paul and James to listen out to. James, obviously, from the Reading Chronicle, and Paul, voice of EPR. So keep an ear out for that when it comes out. It'll be kind of a deadline day special, also looking at the Oxford game from a Reading perspective. So keep an eye on socials for that. If you have, of course, enjoyed the podcast, be sure to give it a 5-star rating on your podcast of choice. Really does help us out, and everything on all the things on that side of things, ratings, rankings, all that jazz. So yeah, please do remember to do that and follow all of our socials on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram to keep up to date with the latest Reading FC content. Until the next time, obviously, I've been your podcast host, Matt Lansley. This has been the Elm Park Rules Preview Podcast, and we'll catch you on the next one.